postcard time. Noel, welcome.
Hello, John.
Now, we're not going overseas this evening, but we are going to the third world.
Well, John, that's a very provocative thing to say. We are in... Well, that's exactly what people have been assessing as in some of these remote Indigenous communities in Australia, though, where we have things like ear infections, eye disease, tuberculosis, things which you only do see in the third world. There's real concern of some of the more isolated parts of Indigenous communities.
And, of course, we are in the middle of the government's emergency alert on such a dilemma.
Well, indeed, and there's been a lot of voices raised within the Indigenous community and in the public community, and a lot of people around dinner tables are trying to make sense of, is it right or wrong, you know? Is this a vote grab? Is this really something that needs to be done now? There's a lot of talk going on, and Oxfam Australia happens to have launched a campaign about 5th of July. Closing the Gap is now officially up and going. And this is a campaign which is aimed to close that 17-year age gap between the average age of death of the ordinary Aboriginal person and the average age of death of an ordinary white person in Australia. And they have an Indigenous health and wellbeing coordinator for Indigenous people, Lisa Briggs. Lisa's on the line right now.
Lisa Briggs speaking.
Hello, Lisa Briggs. Noel Devine speaking here. Now, you're the health and wellbeing coordinator for Oxfam Australia for Indigenous Health. What does that actually mean?
What that means is that we look at the community development of what Aboriginal communities want themselves. So a lot of our partners are right across Australia, so we are national focused. It can mean that we are working with someone that's doing direct servicing directly to the clients themselves, or it could mean that we're working with organisations that are peak bodies that are working, or representatives of Aboriginal medical services.
So can you give an idea of the sorts of communities and places where Oxfam is connected in?
Well, probably our two most prominent places is in Western Australia in Perth, where we're working with an organisation who is a peak body for Aboriginal health services called the Aboriginal Health Council of Western Australia, and who we do more policy development and probably staff development and capacity and training. And then we have another program that's situated in the Gulf region in Queensland, where it's probably more service direct, hands-on with clients within Mount Isa and the Gulf region itself.
I think we've spoken to Mona Phillips up there, is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Mona's the manager of the Gulf program.
So, in fact, what you're trying to do is get the policy right in approaching health issues with Indigenous communities.
Absolutely. Because we know if you get the policy asked right, and then more funding that comes through is more directed and channeled the right way, you have more impacts on the ground and then better outcomes for us more.
So you're an Indigenous person. Where are your own people from?
I'm from the Gunditjmara tribe in the Western District of Victoria, from the Framlingham Mission.
Okay, so Oxfam is ensuring that somebody who is actually an Indigenous person is working with Indigenous health policy.
Absolutely, and I think that's the key too, that you do need Aboriginal people to be working in the sector of Aboriginal issues in general, because you're far better understanding of where to target, who to reach out to. Some of the organisations and your networks and your strengths are there to assist the program to go further.
Now, this is all happening, I suppose, in the context of a program called Close the Gap. Now, we have spoken about that previously on this program, but can you just remind us what Close the Gap is all about?
Yep. Close the Gap was really initiated through a consortium of non-government agencies such as Oxfam and the AMA, ANTAR, NACHO, which is the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Services, places like that. I'm only naming a few. There are 35 who actually wanted to, in reference to the Close the Gap title, means closing the life expectancy, the 17-year life expectancy between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Australia. And one of our plights is that from the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, Commissioner Tom Carmer, who wrote a report in 2005 saying that if we, Australia and government too, invested $460 million per year, we could actually close that gap of life expectancy for Aboriginal people.
But I suppose that means if you get the policy right and you apply the money the right way.
Exactly right.
Now, what's the right way?
Well, what we're doing is we're working with local Aboriginal people because they're the experts in their own, whether it be health, land, housing, education. So we're doing it from a grassroots, bottom-up approach. We get invited into communities to come and listen to some of the things that they might want to do. And, you know, some's in health, some's in youth, some may be in education and training. And we listen to what they're saying, and then we assist them either through support through Oxfam or giving them alternative approaches to get their programs funded.
If you were to name a particular success story your programs have had, where would you be pointing?
I think one of the most significant success stories has been the women's and babies programs that have been conducted through the Aboriginal Health Services themselves across the country, Noel, where they have been able to demonstrate the increase in birth weights of babies and reducing the mortality rates of our young babies dying too early. And that has been a significant change over the last 5 to 10 years because from the ABS stats that have come out, it showed that Aboriginal babies are 3 times more likely to have low birth weights and die of mortality than wider Australia. So I think it's been a significant impact and a success story for Aboriginal health services and women's and babies programs across the country.
Have you got a quantity on that, how you're measuring that success?
What happens is, given an example for the Townsville Aboriginal Medical Service, they've actually conducted an evaluation on that project and collected data that highlights that. But a lot of the Aboriginal health services, including the Victorian Aboriginal Health Service in Fitzroy, has also been able to collect that data through the patient management, antenatal care, and through the child maternal health nurses, engaging that to demonstrate that evidence.
I'm interested to ask because there is, in a sense, it is now a truism among the helping professions that you listen to what the community is saying, you try to hear what they're saying to approach issues that they're facing, to give them assistance with that. So that is, I think, something that people hear and understand. But are you hearing things across the various Indigenous communities you deal with where they're saying things that are similar about policy and needs? Are there similar or key issues that are starting to crystallise for you?
I think one of the things that's coming out very clearly is they do want people to consult with them, and that's just a generic ways of working really with Aboriginal people. And in terms of policy, what they're saying is don't just pilot programs. And you know, there's been a lot of programs that have been piloted by the government who've given it, I don't know, 3-year funds. It's worked really well, had really great impacts on the ground, and then they've taken that money away.
So there's a bit of a fly-in, fly-out feeling about it.
That's right. And so what they're saying is if you're going to deliver the policy, do it right through to the end. Don't just come in, band-aid it, as we call it, and then take the band-aid off as it's healed, because it hasn't been yet. You know, it takes a long time. There are a lot of issues that will take a lot longer than others. And again, if an example, the diabetes programs, there are some that are nutrition-based, there are some that are, you know, in foot care and stuff. But if they have a comprehensive diabetes program, you're probably going to be more likely to have better outcomes and have people less likely going into hospital, because diabetes can be assisted with good control with their blood sugars and stuff. We know all that. But if you haven't got the right resources or tools to do that, you're going to have a lot more increases of people going to hospital. So it's more practical policy stuff on, you know, making sure you start it and you keep going and you work with it till the end, not just rip it out halfway through or after a 3-year intervention.
Now, we're also in a climate in recent weeks on the federal government's move to intervene in the Northern Territory with those communities like Mutitjulu and others as well. Not so much around Darwin up the top, but other communities are getting some very direct intervention at the moment. Now, how much overlap has your policy work and Oxfam's work had with those communities that are being directly affected by this?
Well, with the policy work that we have been working with, we've been working with AMSANT for a couple of years now, and it's probably
ANSANT. Can you just explain ANSANT for us?
ANSANT's the Aboriginal Medical Services Northern Alliance of the Northern Territory. and they're the peak body for the Aboriginal health services in the NT. And some of the things, like the Northern Territory, we know all these reports that have been going over for many, many years, with the Northern Territory asking, they have workforce shortages, they have health service issues with access to health services, they have flying doctor services, but they need more follow-up care. So there's, you know, even if it extends to housing or child welfare or whatever it is, there's been numerous reports that have been put out. And I don't think the policy asks are any different that Oxfam's been working with them on to what they've been asking for anyway. Because remembering, we're working with them from the bottom up and making sure that we're going in there and listening to what they're saying.
So but, am I hearing there you say that this top-down approach, which is effectively a federal government initiative, is probably not your optimum approach for Oxfam?
No, I wouldn't say so. Because how are you then going to, given the example of the stuff that's going to happen in the NT, initially they said they weren't going to do any more consultations with the Northern Territory because they've been over-consulted. That's what Mal Brough said not so long ago. And ironically, they're still going in there doing the consultations because they need to talk to the people on how to effectively overcome some of the health crises that are happening in the NT. Otherwise, it's not going to work. If they've got language barriers, English is their third language up there. It's not their first language. They have issues about accessing hospitals and the area that they have to cover. Within the Northern Territory, it's not like the urban settings that a lot of people see and live in Australia. And I think that's some of the problems that we don't see unless we're there.
Is there a sense, though, in which consensus among Indigenous leaders in Australia about what is the best approach? I'm thinking, you know, Noel Pearson on one hand, Lawitja O'Donoghue and others on Mark Wenetong. There are lots of people saying strong things at the moment. And for those around the dinner table often trying to talk it through, in the ordinary way we do from the newspapers and radio and television, it's hard to try to get a sense of, is there one way to approach this?
Yep. I don't think there is one way for any one person. Just like if there was a person, as an individual, you yourself, Noel, might be, going to the doctor and, you're going to be treated different for your needs than the next person that's actually going to come in. It's the same for us in different communities.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't going to be a one fix or one shoe fits all in this scenario. So what might work well in one community in the Northern Territory is not necessarily going to work well in another part of the Northern Territory, because you have to think about what resourcing is around, what availability of people or human resources around for them. How far is that community from the hospital or a service or a pharmacy to compared to another person? So you can't really do that one shoe fits all in this case, or any case really.
Can I ask then, given, Lisa, that you're Health and Wellbeing Coordinator for the Indigenous Australia Program for Oxfam, which is a national organisation, the announcement's been made in the Northern Territory, the federal government is moving in. How is Oxfam going to work with these initiatives that have come from the federal government to get the best outcomes out of this?
Well, what we do still and will continue to do, Noel, is because Oxfam is not a philanthropic agency, it's a human rights-based organisation, we work with the Aboriginal organisations themselves to make sure that the programs that are going in there and giving them a voice. So if half of the impacts that Oxfam have with them is helping set the platform through the Close the Gap campaign in just asking for the basic necessity, their basic human rights to health, education, housing, the basic rights that they should have, then that's the role Oxfam will play, because that's what we do. Could I just say that if there are people out there that would like to assist in the Close the Gap campaign, that could I direct them to our website, which is www.oxfam.org.au, and it has on there about the Close the Gap campaign, and if they want more information, to call us.
We'll have that up on our ABC website.
Thank you very much, Noel.
Lisa Briggs, Indigenous Health and Wellbeing Coordinator for Oxfam Australia, thanks for talking to Sunday Nights.
Bye.